47. Maracy's team neared the bottom of the elevator shaft without incident, carefully using Twin Soul's rosite ladder. Red-pink dust crumbled around her as she slowed her climb, the little motes often evaporating in the air below her. Maracy probably had a dusting of them in her hair, smoldering there like simmering ashes without the heat. They found the large service elevator settled snug on the bottom of the shaft. Twin Soul expanded his ladder to the sides so that all three of them could climb down beside one another. Then Maracy tested the roof of the elevator with her toe. Solid, sturdy metal. She lowered her weight onto it carefully, and it didn't even bow. She nodded to the others, who joined her.
"Now what?" Moonlight whispered. "Service hatch," Maracy said, locating one set into the other corner.
She eased it open. The front doors of the elevator were open, though she couldn't see much more from this angle. She waved Twin Soul over.
"Can you see if there's anyone watching below?"
A small line of rosite provided answers.
"Sila Jana sees two guards,"
Twin Soul whispered.
"A man and a woman, armed with rifles. They are opposite the open elevator door, near a natural stone wall. It appears that we have indeed arrived at a series of tunnels and caverns. The guards do not seem observant, and are currently looking at one another rather than the elevator. Should I try to send them to the Aethers, their souls left to ruminate on their poor choices in this particular life?"
"She wants to remain quiet, Twin Soul," Moonlight said. "That might be overkill." "I can handle this," Maracy whispered, "though it would help if you could lower me through that hole a little, Twin Soul, so I can see."
He obliged, creating a small lattice of crystals to support her as she lowered her head into the elevator, her hair hanging down. The two guards stood amid some large crates, facing each other and leaning back against separate boxes. Twin Soul was right. They weren't paying attention. Actually, they appeared to be flirting. At least, the man was giggling at his own jokes and the woman was pretending not to be impressed. From her side pouch, Maracy took out one of her elemantic grenades and then attached her fishing line. She charged the grenade, then waited, and patience rewarded her when the man said something that finally made the woman laugh. With them distracted, Maracy threw her grenade, which activated immediately after touching down. The two guards, focused on one another, hopefully wouldn't notice that time around them had slowed.
"All right," Maracy whispered, holding the fishing line. "Let's go."
Maracy dropped into the elevator with a thump. Moonlight followed more stealthily, prowling forward as she landed. Twin Soul lowered majestically on a pole of rosite with a foothold. He stepped off, then stumbled and put his hand to the wall of the elevator, steadying himself. The three of them checked the tunnel for any other guards. It was empty, and slipped out, careful not to touch the barely visible edge of the slowness bubble, which was shimmering like the air above hot pavement. The two guards remained frozen there. The woman's eyes closed as she laughed, the man grinning and fixated on his companion. Hopefully, he wouldn't catch blurs from the corner of his eye. Maracy and the others hid in a nearby cross tunnel. She yanked her grenade up and out, using the fishing line, and the bubble collapsed. She snatched the grenade from the air as the female guard's laugh echoed from amid the crates. Maracy waited, tense. Had they been seen? Had either of them heard the grenade hit the stone over the sound of laughter? Their conversation continued as if nothing had happened. Maracy nodded in relief to the others, and they prowled a little farther down their current tunnel. It was lit by a series of miner's lights on a thick cord on the wall, creating alternating darker sections and brightly lit ones.
"That was well executed," Moonlight whispered as Maracy rewound the fishing line. "Only one way to go for now. Down this tunnel?"
Maracy nodded.
"I feel exposed like this," Twin Soul whispered. "We could encounter more guards."
Maracy felt the same, but there was little they could do. They continued along the tunnel, which felt much like the one she'd entered with Wayne the other day. Smooth, ancient rock, with some rubble here and there, showing that chunks had fallen in from the ceiling during explosive weapon tests. And perhaps some of the blasts had been used not to test, but to connect tunnels and caverns. Voices echoed from up ahead. Marcy glanced behind them at the long exposed tunnel, then pointed forward toward one of the darker sections where she thought she saw some larger chunks of rubble. Twin Soul lagged behind, despite his promise, as Marcy and Moonlight hurried into the shadows. None of those speaking were visible yet as the tunnel turned ahead. Marcy crouched behind some rubble, Moonlight joining her. The stone chunks only just came up past her knees when she crouched, but it was better than nothing. They waved anxiously to Twin Soul, who did his best, stumbling as he arrived and falling to his knees near them. Then stone began to grow from his hand. It arced up around them, darker colored than his usual rosite. Though it was still pink, the shadows hid the color. He took a long drink from his backpack to restore his water, then, at his urging, they all crouched as low as they could go and let the rosite grow over them, leaving a small section clear at the front so they could see what was happening outside. A group of patrolling soldiers wandered around the bend. There were only five of them, but Marcy was glad for the cover as they paused and chatted about the Lord Mayor's visit, then split up in opposite directions. One patrol went back toward the elevator right past their hiding place. They didn't even look down. Still, Marcy's heart thundered in her chest until the tunnel fell silent again, and she risked a whisper.
"You two certainly are handy."
"Thank you, my lady,"
Twin Soul said.
"This is only a fraction of the talents members of the Ghost Bloods have," Moonlight noted. "You'll be amazed at the things we will show you." "If I join," Marcy said. "I don't truly know what you are, what you do."
"Well, that is easy to explain," Twin Soul said. "We have three general tenets."
"Protect Scadrial,"
Moonlight said, standing up as the rosite shell began to disintegrate.
"But neither of you are from here,"
Marcy whispered.
"True,"
Twin Soul said.
"But my homeland is inhospitable to my kind for now. I joined Lord Kelsier for the opportunity to gain allies and resources for my eventual fight against the Dark Aether. And having this planet remain safe and uncorrupted is a worthy goal on its own."
"And you?" Marcy asked Moonlight. "You can't go home either?"
"I can't," she said, "but I don't care so much about that. I'm keeping an eye on a particular enemy of the Ghost Bloods. Plus, I like secrets."
She nodded forward. They continued, and after they checked around the bend and made sure no one else was coming, Marcy whispered to Moonlight,
"What are the other two tenets?"
"We share what we know with each other," Moonlight said. "There are no secrets within a team. If you ask Kelsier, even he'll tell you what he's planning. But you absolutely can't share secrets outside the organization without his permission." "And the last one?"
"We trust each other,"
Twin Soul said.
"We're a team, a family. You join us, you absolutely swear not to make a move against another Ghost Blood. No infighting, no betrayals, no undermining one another, no squabbling over resources or favor."
"We take it very seriously, Marcy," Moonlight said. "And the way you act, your attitude as part of a team, is one of the main reasons we came to you."
"And not," she implied, "to wax." They went on, Marcy chewing on those tenets. She swallowed the last one easily. Not moving against one another, not undermining the mission or goals of another member of the group, that sounded wonderful. More than once, she'd collided with another constable's ambition, preventing her from getting things done. The other tenet, though, not sharing information with those outside? That sat in her gut like a stone. She was a constable for the city of Ellendel. Joining the Ghost Bloods would be like swearing allegiance to another country. But the secrets they knew, the things they were doing... She doubted that if she joined the Ghost Bloods, she'd ever have to waste her time dealing with small-time criminals again. She put it all out of her mind for the time being as they reached an intersection. The rightmost turn was particularly well lit. There, two long, narrow structures had been built out along the tunnel, one on each side. The path continued between them, as if they were shops on a street. Peeking around the corner into this tunnel, Marisie could see that one of the two buildings was guarded by thick-armed men, the Lord Mayor's bodyguards. The two men were distracted, though, talking to someone inside, which gave Marisie an opportunity. She led the way, crouching low around the corner, and crossed the short distance to the rightmost building. She was joined by the other two as the bodyguards finished their conversation and closed the door, settling into guard postures. A window on this short end of the building, where Marisie and the others hid, gave her a chance to steal a look. And there he was, right inside. The Lord Mayor himself, in formal dining wear, hair slicked back with something greasy, sitting at a table. Aside from him, there were two additional guards settling in by the door. Four people in white lab coats huddled near Gave's table, one handing him something to drink. Marisie frowned, noticing Gave's slumped-over posture. He looked worn, far less commanding or smug than he was at the police station. He shook his head.
"What odds do you give her?"
he asked, his voice muffled from inside but audible.
"Of getting that bomb to fly, of actually salvaging this."
"That's not my department, sir," one of the scientists said. "I'm not an engineer."
"I can't believe it's come to this," Gave said, his voice softening. "I didn't think when I agreed." "Are they here?"
"Nearly,"
another scientist said.
"How many?"
Gave asked.
"A lot," the woman replied. "An army of soldiers with golden skin and glowing red eyes." "Sir, is it true? Are they—"
Gave pounded the table.
"I'm supposed to be in control. She's supposed to fail, and I'm supposed to take her place."
"You will, sir," one of the scientists said. "If she doesn't get the bomb working, autonomy will kill her."
"And invade the whole rusting basin,"
Gave said, hands to his face.
"Maybe the world. Damn. It wasn't supposed to be like this."
He downed his shot and hauled himself to his feet. Marisie shared a glance with the others. They'd known autonomy was planning some sort of decisive attack if Telson failed to prove she could control the basin. It seemed that maybe Gave had been assigned to facilitate that.
It would be convenient for him, she thought, to have these caverns as a bunker in case a destructive war breaks out above. That would explain the food, too. And some kind of invading army?
She remembered how awed Miles Hundredlives had been, speaking of the men of gold and red as he died. Rusts.
"How many soldiers of our own do we have left in the bunker?" Entrone asked.
"Two contingents," said a scientist who seemed to be in charge, a thick-bodied woman in a white lab coat.
"And metal-blessed?" Entrone asked.
"None," the woman said.
"That woman," Entrone said, "is deliberately trying to leave me short-manned."
He started pacing.
"Well, I'm forced to support her, lest the worst option play out. I can't believe I let it get this far. We need some kind of military presence to corral those alien soldiers."
"Can we do that?" the scientist asked.
"I don't know," he said, putting his hand to his head. "I don't want to rule ashes. Rusts. Ed Warren's plans were always superior. We should have been pushing for those instead of Telson's idiotic bomb."
"Yes, my Lord Mayor," Labcoat said. "Speaking of Ed Warren's plans, did you want to proceed with the test?"
He waved for her to do so, and Labcoat sent her two assistants to the far side of the room, the stone wall of the tunnel. Marisie had missed a thick door set into the rock, made of strong wood with sturdy locks on the outside. The assistants undid these, opening the door to reveal a group of some 20 people huddled in the darkness. They wore an assortment of different kinds of clothing, some expensive, others just common work clothes. All were grungy and rumpled. With pistols drawn, the assistants picked out a lean woman in a torn evening dress, her face streaked with makeup. She barely resisted, looking too exhausted for anything more than a token protest. The door was locked again, and the assistants strapped her face down to a table. Then one took out a silvery spike, long and thin. Maracy felt a chill, then nausea. Was this? Oh, ruin. Were they making an allomancer? She'd read about the process in the book Death had given her, but she'd never wanted to see it in person. Labcoat took out a notebook. "We believe that we've isolated the technique Edworn was onto," she said. "Indeed, we've refined it. The process involves a very thin spike, my Lord Mayor, and, oddly, the right mindset."
"Mindset?" he asked.
"You need to know what you're doing and why," the woman explained. "It helps to whisper a command as you work, though we find it isn't strictly necessary. Trauma on the part of the subject is helpful as well."
At a nod from her, the assistants threaded the long spike through the skin of the woman's upper back, almost like they were sewing with a 6-inch needle. The poor woman made a pained whimper, and the assistant doing the procedure mumbled something to himself, then pushed the needle slowly back through her skin as if making two holes for some kind of piercing. The woman screamed louder as the process finished. As soon as the spike left her skin, the holes started bleeding. The woman fell silent, and the assistant washed off the bloodied spike and handed it to Labcoat, who promptly placed it in a solution attached to a device and examined it.
"Roughly 5% invested," she reported to Entrone. "And as you can see, the subject is still alive. We've essentially excised a piece of the soul and stored it in the metal."
Wait, they'd made a spike without killing the woman? That was supposed to be impossible. Granted, Maracy hadn't studied Death's book in as much detail as Wax had, but she was fairly sure hemallergy always killed its subject.
"So," Entrone said, "I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't particularly care if these people live or die. Creating spikes without killing them is pointless. We need Metalborn in huge numbers. That will impress Autonomy. That will make her realize this planet is a resource, not something to be burned."
"Ah, my lord," the woman said, "this woman isn't Metalborn. We've invested a spike, a tiny bit, granted, using an ordinary person. All people are invested by ruin and preservation as part of our very makeup, and we have a little extra preservation blessed by the shards upon our creation. We're pulling some of that out. The percentage you get depends on the person. We think it might have to do with how likely they were genetically to be Metalborn. But they don't need that extra if the powers didn't manifest in them. It's vestigial. We simply slice it off and use it in a spike. Fully investing one takes between 20 and 30 people."
"But can you make allomancers from those spikes?" Entrone said. "That's the key part."
The scientist glanced at the others.
"Sir, this is a fantastic result. A huge step forward in—"
"Can you make me allomancers?" he demanded. "Now, today, to show Autonomy."
"No," Labcoat admitted. "We think we need to code this in some way to give a specific metallic art blessing. We are working on that. We've had some few gain a power for a short time using one of these spikes, but it gives out soon after."
"Damn," Entrone muttered.
"That means Edworn's community project here is still valuable."
He folded his arms, looking worn down again.
"But we have nothing to show Autonomy at the present. I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to let her army through. Call all of our remaining loyalists, those not working directly for Tilson, into the caverns."
"But," Labcoat began.
"We wait," he said, "for Tilson to initiate her plan. We give her every opportunity. And then if it doesn't work..."
"We survive," Labcoat said.
"We survive," he nodded to himself.
"I'm going to the community to see to the perpendicularity."
He waved toward the cell at the rear of the room.
"They have all heard and seen too much. They are a liability. Execute them."
"Of course, my lord," Labcoat said. Entrone left, leaving the two guards inside, but collecting the two in the tunnel. He slammed the door, making the flimsy structure shake.
Fortunately, once outside, he turned and continued farther into the complex instead of walking past Maracy and her team. "Fetch me some Invel gas pellets," Labcoat said to the assistants in the room. "That will be a painless end for the captives. Fionn, tell our loyalists to retreat to the caverns. They can bring their families, but nothing else. A priority one evacuation order. This is the real thing." One of the assistants left at a dead run, also going farther into the complex. The other began fiddling in cabinets at the side of the room. Maracy and the two Ghostbloods crouched in the shadows, whispering.
"We have to get this information to Kelsier," Moonlight said. "A new way of making spikes could change everything." "It's still brutal," Maracy whispered back. "Stealing a piece of someone's soul? It's better than murdering them, but I doubt this is something we could use in good conscience." "You don't understand," Moonlight said. "If they're even close to forging Metalborn out of the raw power of souls, if they've had tests that resulted in an Allomancer, no matter how fleeting, Maracy, that path could lead to creating spikes using pure investiture instead of souls." She tapped her rucksack, indicating the glowing jars inside. "Ruin. The ability to create spikes in a mechanical way? Even the process of making medallions among the Malwish required Metalborn. If what Moonlight implied was right, then it would change everything."
"For now," Twinsoul said, "Sila Janna reminds us that the planet itself is in danger. Getting information to Lord Kelsier is meaningless if that invasion happens. We must follow Entron and see if we can interfere with Autonomy's plans."
Maracy peeked around the corner, looking farther down the tunnel. They could sneak past. But the people in that room were about to be executed.
"We have to help the prisoners," Maracy said. "A few lives are meaningless right now," Moonlight said. "We need to keep moving. It's our way." "It's not mine," Maracy said. "I'm an officer of the law. I can't leave a group of people to be murdered. Besides, he said they'd heard too much. They know something of use to us."
Moonlight and Twin Soul glanced to one another.
"I'm going to help them," Maracy said. "There are only two guards. We should be able to stop those with ease."
"If anything goes wrong," Moonlight said, "it could alert everyone down here. One gunshot."
Maracy hesitated, weighing the risks. It might be foolish, she acknowledged, but she hadn't become a constable to leave people to be murdered. She stood up straight.
"It is a risk I will take. Are you with me, or do I do it alone?"
The other two stood.
"Let's do it quickly, then," Moonlight said.